Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you for standing by. Welcome to today's SES 2019 half-year results conference for investors and analysts. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. There will be a presentation followed by a question-and-answer session, at which time, if you wish to ask a question, you will need to press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. I must advise you the conference is being recorded today, Friday the 26th of July 2019. Without any further delay, I would like to hand the conference over to your speaker today, Mr. Richard Whiting, Vice President and Head of Investor Relations. Please go ahead, sir.
Thanks, Julia. Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining this presentation of the half-year 2019 results. Today's presentation and the other results document are available, as usual, on the investor section of the SES.com website if you don't already have them. As always, please note the disclaimer at the back. The agenda for this morning is as usual, and it's outlined on page 2. In a moment, Steve Collar, President and CEO, will present the main business highlights. Ferdinand Kaiser and JP Hemingway, the CEOs of SES Video and SES Networks, will cover the main developments in their respective businesses. Andrew Brown, our CFO, will then cover the financial highlights in a bit more detail. The presentation will conclude with some closing remarks from Steve, and there will be the usual opportunity to ask questions after that. So with that, let me hand over to Steve.
Thanks, Richard. Morning, everyone. As usual, I'm going to talk through the highlights and then hand over to Ferd and JP. Starting on page 4, we've delivered a solid first half of the year with our financial results in line with our expectations and consistent with the full year outlook that we've given back in February. Our network business continues to deliver strong sustainable growth quarter on quarter, with growth up 5% and on an underlying basis. And we've also closed some important deals during the first half that will contribute fully in the second half. Video continues to track to expectations despite a challenging market. I'm also pleased that the impact of our laser focused on cost control and discretionary spending is starting to come through, allowing us to keep group operating expenses flat compared to the first half of 2018. We are continuing to evolve our organization, framed around customer focus and success, but also around internal efficiency and simplification, and having already brought all of our engineering resources together and implemented a common global services team across video and networks, we're now combining our video infrastructure and services as far as the go-to-market teams. That will be done in Q3, and I see a lot of good momentum coming from those internal organizational changes, particularly with respect to our customers, where we're getting some very strong feedback. Our financial outlook is unchanged. As was the case in 2018, we expect expansion of revenue in the second half and have good visibility of this progression over the course of the next several months and through the end of the year. As you'll have heard me say a lot, execution is obviously key, and that's our focus for the second half, in particular in delivering projects in a timely way and getting our new customers into service as quickly as possible. And lastly, in terms of highlights on this page, we've made strong progress with respect to C-band in the US, and I'll expand a little on why I'm increasingly optimistic that an outcome that balances the needs of all stakeholders will be forthcoming in the second half of the year. So, over on page 5, the message is that the first half is in line with our expectations across the board, our full year consistent also with our full year guidance. We're on track on video, networks, group and EBITDA. Group revenue was 961.4 million in the first half, which is down 4% at constant exchange. Notwithstanding a challenging environment, video is performing to expectation with the prospect of an improving trend relative to the first half, notably with international platforms and MX1, and Ferd will speak to this in a moment. Another period of strong growth in networks, with underlying revenue up 5%, following on from a year last year of double-digit growth, and that growth will continue, an uptick in the second half of the year, and again, JP will talk about the drivers to that shortly. It will certainly be boosted with the arrival of the last of our O3b satellites, which have just gone into service, and now with the initial constellation complete, we look ahead to O3b mPOWER. And I'm really super excited by the progress we're making on mPOWER. We're now through CBR, have some good traction developing in the market as we look towards launch in 2021, and expect to talk more about that in the second half also. So, yeah, on the numbers, EBITDA very much on track, and we'll continue to be disciplined in terms of cost and discretionary spend. 90% of revenue outlook for the year is already secure, and as I said, full focus of the business is to execute and deliver on our promise to both customers and to the market. And then lastly for me, on page six, give you a short update on C-band. You will all undoubtedly have seen plenty of activity in the US as the FCC looks to complete the record and ensure that all voices have been heard. Freeing mid-band spectrum for 5G is of national importance in the US, but it's a complicated thing and there are many stakeholders. We've been consistent in our view that our market-based CBA proposal is the only one that protects the 120 million TV households in the US while allowing for the rapid and safe repurposing of spectrum for 5G. Again, as you'll have seen, the CBA has placed a lot of meat on the bones over the last several months, providing transparency over not just the what, but also the how, as it relates to our technical solution, the clearing of spectrum, the accelerated sales process that places spectrum rapidly and fairly into the market, and serving the public interest. As we said in the past, timing's hard for us to predict, and the FCC obviously drives the timing, but with the focus that we're seeing in ensuring that the record is complete, and with comments from the chairman that he expects to have results to show this fall, I'm more and more optimistic that we'll have clarity on the process over the course of the next several months. So with that, I'll hand over to Ferd and then to JP to talk a little bit more about the business, and I'll come back and conclude at the end.
Thank you, Steve. And starting with the highlights for video on slide 8. So in the first half of the year 2019, Asia Video generated a revenue of 605 million euros. This represented an underlying decline of 8.8%, which has been in line with our expectations. This included the impact of lower revenue from the US wholesale contracts that we mentioned in February, and so we believe this is not indicative of the expected long-term revenue trajectory. Market conditions remain challenging, but nevertheless we can point to several positives in half one. First, the 3% growth year on year for the number of high definition and ultra high definition channels being distributed via our fleet, which is now at 2,888 channels in total. Second, our initiatives to combine our video distribution and our video services activities are well underway and progressing well. And lastly, as Steve mentioned, we have now secured 90% of the expected revenue for 2019 in video, and we are on track to deliver on the full year outlook as was the case in 2018. The priority for the colleagues across the business is now to close out on the remaining, and we have good visibility, especially in the international markets such as Asia, Africa, and Latin America. Also, the combination of both infrastructure and services will be completed in the third quarter, which will also support a revenue improvement in half two, in particular in the sport and events business, where we continue to build commercial relationships with customers such as the major sports leagues, sports rights holders, and other key client groups. During the first half, we concluded some important contracts. We have mentioned some of those on slide 9. First of all, the long-term renewal with Crown Media for the Hallmark channels. This one stands for other renewals concluded during the first half of the year 2019 in North America, where the contracts of a total of 15 transponders were renewed. We concluded various contracts in the international markets. Amongst the most important ones are the ones we concluded in Ethiopia, one of the fastest growing African economies, contracts with the public service broadcaster ABC for their various channels, and with the Association of Ethiopian Broadcasters and the 14 commercial broadcasters being members of the association. The agreements foresee a dedicated Ethiopian neighborhood on NSS 12 at 57 East, with some existing channels migrating from other positions to NSS 12, and of course new additional channels being launched on this orbital position. Another important development is the one in Germany, our single most important DTH market, with a continuous reach of 17.5 million households, where we reached agreements with both Samsung and Panasonic, both manufacturers now selling their TV sets in Germany with the HD Plus encryption and software being integrated, so allowing consumers to access the HD Plus offering without any additional set-top box or other hardware. Additional TV set manufacturers will follow shortly. Regarding MX1 and the video services, we continue to see a positive dynamic in the sports and events area. In particular, good examples here are the distribution of the signal of the Women's World Cup and one of the Eurovision Song Contest. So now moving to the individual video segments in more detail, starting with the distribution part on slide 10. Underlying revenue was 8.7% lower than last year, where a key factor has been lower revenue from our US wholesale business based on our renewal with the customer. In addition, we continue to see some volume reductions in US cable business. In Europe, we have now some slight volume reductions, especially with some long-term renewals secured at the end of 2018, and which I referred to in the Q1 results. In addition, we continue to experience the effect of the expiration of certain capacity contracts signed on a short-term basis, as noted in the second half of 2018. Trading conditions in international markets continue to be challenging, but I'm happy to see the effects of our recent wins, as the pace of the decline is now much slower than it was the case in 2018. In addition, we have taken steps to address some challenges for Yeah Live, where it is fair to say the performance has not been as we had liked. So we are fully integrating the Yeah Live sales and commercial operation teams, and the colleagues are focused now on building the commercial pipeline as well as delivering further operational efficiencies. Finally, on slide 11, video services were 9.4% lower than last year. HD Plus was stable with the sustained number of paying subscribers during the first half of the year 2019 compared to last year. And regarding MX1, revenue was lower as we continue to shift our portfolio and exit certain low-margin legacy contracts. This is part of a bigger initiative I have mentioned earlier and will continue and will ensure an even stronger value proposition for our customers, who will see greater benefit from the combination of our infrastructure and services capabilities, especially in the IP distribution, OTT and long-linear video space. And with that, I hand over to GP.
Thank you, Ferd, and good morning to you all. So starting with the highlights for SES Networks on slide 13. As Steve said, after a great 2018, we continued to deliver solid growth in the first half 2019, with Networks delivering 5% underlying revenue growth. We reported total revenue of €356 million in the first half, and we grew across multiple segments, including government, aero, cruise, mobile network operators, and energy. I'm also confident our strong results will continue to improve as we increasingly leverage the capabilities of our GEO high-throughput satellites. We are developing strong sales pipeline leveraging both SES 14 in the Americas and SES 12 across Middle East and the Asia-Pacific regions. In addition, SES 15 continues to be a very successful satellite, and we have continued to expand in support of North American aero connectivity services. As of the end of H1, we've secured over 85% of the 2019 revenue outlook, which implies another strong year of growth. So we're on track, as Steve mentioned, and we know what we need to execute on and are fully focused on delivering within the full year range. Our execution in the second half is underpinned with good visibility on customer demand, service deployments, milestone-based projects, and our ability to access the latest batch of O3b MEO satellites, which are now operational. It is worth noting that our pipeline for O3b Empower, our next generation of MEO capabilities, is developing well, with many customers talking about extending existing contracts into O3b Empower services. So now I'd like to move on to slide 14 and look at some of our more recent customer successes. So I mentioned Teleglobe in the Q1 call, but I'd like to highlight it here again as not only due to its significance in the Indonesia market and as a major customer of an SES 12, but also to note that our service readiness is progressing very well and we look to start services in the very near future and bring revenues in the second half. Another key development in Q1 was the European Maritime Safety Agency, or EMSA, for whom we continue to support with an active mission over the waters of Iceland in support of the Iceland authorities. We actually see strong potential for other such remotely piloted aircraft projects in the future. With Genting, we are delighted to leverage our signature crew solution for their flagship Dream Cruise fleet, providing incredible passenger digital experiences, further demonstrating that our combination of MEO low latency and GEO satellite coverage with optimized service performance is becoming the market-leading solution in the cruise industry. And lastly, on this slide, with INRED, a leading Colombian service provider, we are actively engaging in the Colombian Ministry of Telecommunications project to support its initiative to ensure that digital future belongs to everyone. Leveraging our signature enterprise solution and a managed platform service on SES 14, we will work together with INRED to deliver 1,000 Wi-Fi hotspots to remote areas and are confident there is significant expansion options in the future. So now I'll just flip through the individual vertical performances, starting with government on slide 15. We are reporting nearly 8% underlying growth in the first half compared to last year, with positive developments in both of our government segments. First, with the US government, where growth was driven not only by the expansion of MEO solutions, but also saw growth in a number of geo-based programs. Second, with our global government business, which included positive contribution across all of our portfolio, including GovSat 1, the continued momentum in supporting critical humanitarian operations, and our institutional programs. We expect to see growth in the second half with government customers with strong execution on known projects. So moving on to fixed data on slide 16. In what remains a challenging market, fixed data was slightly down in the first half 2019 by just over 2% overall, a result which we still believe is a robust performance and reflects some project timing aspects. As mentioned earlier, we continue to deliver new commercial successes with telcos, mobile network operators and service providers, especially in the Americas, but also in Asia with SES 12 and with MEO across multiple regions. We saw good development with multiple tier 1 network operators, with Digicel, with Datacom and PNG, and with Tigo Chat. In general, the progression and take-up of our managed services and platforms is positive in both MEO and GEO, and underlines our strategy to manage the space and teleport services and allow our partners to focus on excellent, regionalized customer experience. Finally, in mobility on slide 11, we continue to deliver in the first half another strong performance with nearly 11% underlying growth. Aero continues to be a significant driver of growth and strengthens our position in the market, specifically with the ramp of SES 15 and SES 14, and indeed our KA-based aero network, which enabled expansion with our service provider partners to airlines across the Americas and the Atlantic. We focused on working with Intelsat and partnering to help restore services after their satellite anomaly and IS-29E. As a result, the second quarter also included the first revenues from our restoration agreement and with a full 6 months contribution to come in the second half of the year. In maritime, our market leading position in cruise continues to get stronger. The benefit of recent wins, as we showed today, and customer upgrades is now becoming pronounced in our overall performance. So in summary, the first half of 2019 has developed as per our expectations with commercial successes across the business. This leaves us in a good position with good knowledge of what we need to achieve for the remainder of the year to deliver another year of strong growth. And with that, I'll hand over to Andrew.
Thanks very much, JP. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Turning to financial highlights on page 19. As Steve has mentioned, we delivered a solid performance in line with expectations and remain on track to meet 2019 financial outlook, as indeed we did in 2018. Revenue for the first half was $961.4 million, with underlying revenue lower by 4.2% compared with H1 2018. On the reported basis, revenues was 2% lower, including the benefit of the stronger US dollar. A constant FX, total revenue including periodic and other, was 5.1% lower than the prior year. EBITDA of 584.5 million represented an EBITDA margin of 60.8%, or indeed 62% excluding the 11.4 million restructuring charge. As Steve has mentioned, our operating costs were kept flat on a constant FX basis. Really tight focus on cost, discretionary spend allowed us to deliver operational efficiencies across the group and indeed offsetting a continuing investment in expanding our network business. But combined with the impact of the lower reported revenue, EBITDA was 5.9% lower as reported and 8.4% lower at the constant FX. Net profit was 169.2 million compared to 227.7 million last year, and essentially following the trend in EBITDA with additional depreciation related to satellites being brought into service. Free cash flow before financing of 379.8 million benefited from the 30.3% reduction we've seen in investing activities compared with the half year of last year, and somewhat offset by working capital timing movements during the period. Net debt to EBITDA was lower at 3.5 times, which compared to 3.53 at H1 2018. This reflects a similar payment phasing as last year, with a significant portion of cash outflow for interest and dividends being paid in the first half of the year. Accordingly, we expect to achieve at or below 3.3 times at the end of the year and align with our firm commitment to investment grade status. Finally, there's no change in the financial outlook, as Steve's mentioned, and this indeed includes our CapEx forecast. So turning quickly to the remaining pages and starting with revenues on page 20, the change in FX, as you can see, accounted for 31.5 million of the total movement on a reported basis. At constant FX, the underlying business was 42 million, or 4.2% lower, reflecting the growth in networks with video development as expected. Total revenue, including 10.2 million of periodic and other revenue, compared with 19.3 million in the same period, 2018. EBITDA, turning to EBITDA on page 21. EBITDA was lower as reported and adjusting for the change in FX, as mentioned. This was driven by lower revenue, with operating expenses flat. In addition, we booked 11.4 million on the restructuring charge as part of our ongoing program to optimize our overall operating structure and operations across the group. Accordingly, EBITDA margin was 60.8%, and including the charge, 62%. Net profit on page 22 was 169.2 million for the first half. Depreciation was higher, including the impact of the entry into service of new satellites, as we mentioned. Net financing costs were slightly higher than the prior period, which benefited from higher levels of capitalized interest. We recorded 22.4 million as income in H21 tax income and some gains in non-controlling interest of 12 million. These two line items were affected in the first half of last year by the deferred tax asset related to the entry into service of GovSat 1 that we own a partnership with the Luxembourg government. CapEx on page 23, as already mentioned, there is no change compared to what we outlined in February. Leverage on page 24 and development net debt to EBITDA was 3.5 times and compares to 3.53 times at the same point last year. We expect 29 to follow the same trend in 2018 and accordingly we expect to be below 3.3 times by the end of the year. And as I said already, firm commitment to investment grade. Lastly, financial outlook on page 25, and indeed as Steve has commented, is unchanged and we are on track to deliver in 2019, as indeed we did in 2018. So with that, I would conclude and hand back to Steve.
Thanks, Andrew. And shortly over to you. In summary, solid first half from both a revenue and EBITDA standpoint, and now it's about execution through the second half. We're on track and our outlook for the year is unchanged. We've got good visibility of our second half revenue, as you have heard from Ferd and JP, and we'll uptick in the second half much as we did in 2018, with networks providing the growth engine for the business. I'm pleased that the impact of the operational changes that we've made to date have been seen both in feedback from customers and control over cost and discretionary spending, which is now evident. We're committing to delivering customer success, and simplifying our team and organisation is really contributing to that goal. And lastly, C-band is starting to crystallise thanks to a lot of work with stakeholders across the board, and I'm optimistic about our role in creating a real win-win in the US with our market-based solution. So with that, we'll stop and hand back to Richard for Q&A.
Thanks, Steve. Julia, I think we can go ahead and take our first question.
Yeah, absolutely. Ladies and gentlemen, may I remind you, if you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request, please press the hash key. But once again, that's star 1 if you wish to ask a question. And your first question comes from the line of Paul Sidney from Credit Suisse. Your line is open. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you very much. Just three questions, please. Firstly, Steve, you're clearly indicating that H2 trends should improve. I was just wondering, could you just sort of pull together all the potential positives that will contribute to that second half improvement? There's obviously a lot of narrative in the statement relating to it. But I was just wondering if you could just sort of pull it all together for us, and perhaps in the interest of balance, are there any tailwinds, specific tailwinds in the second half that we should be aware of as well? And then secondly, just sort of more bigger picture, it's been quite a tough couple of years for you. It does feel that things are changing for the better. Do you think we are now heading into an era of sustainable revenue growth? Do you think sort of H1 was the tipping point? And then just lastly on C-band, there's clearly a lot of debate around the auction structure, and I was just wondering if the C-band alliance was faced with a potential FCC-led auction, would that be potentially acceptable to the C-band alliance under certain conditions? Thank you.
Thanks, Paul. Look, I mean, I'm not sure I've got loads to add to what JP and Ferd said around kind of what's going to drive the uptick. What I'd say on the network side is we've got a significant number of projects which we are on track to deliver in the second half, and that will drive a significant amount of that revenue. We've also closed a number of customer deals. We've actually had a really strong quarter in terms of closing deals on the network side, but they don't get implemented until sort of early in the second half, so we're kind of driving through that now. And that will start to flow through and provide revenue in the second half. And then on the video side, there's a decent amount of stuff in HD+. We've got some stuff in MX1, sports and events in particular, where we're looking for some upticks, some international business that we're in the process of closing. So all of that, I would say, gives us momentum. And as I said, you know, good sort of visibility. And again, it tracks what we delivered in 2018, so I think we have good confidence. And similarly on the, I think a tough couple of years, yes, I think it's true that the industry is going through probably more change than at any time in its history. But we, delivered on guidance last year, we intend to do that this year, and so I think being clear internally and externally what we need to do and then delivering on that has been kind of something we've talked about right from day one, and we'll continue to do that. And then on C-band, and your question was sort of around auction design, look, I think one of the key benefits of what we're proposing, and it's something that I think is recognized as we look at the narrative and the record, is speed, and the auction that we've designed really delivers that. It's very quick. It's quicker than any other auction type, but it's also quicker than any FCC-led process, certainly based on previous auctions. And so, look, I don't think we're locked into anything, but we think what we've put on the table is really creative. And leads to, delivers on one of the major objectives, which is speed.
That's great. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Your next question comes from the line of Michael Bishop from Goldman Sachs. Your line is open. Please go ahead.
Yes, thanks very much. Just a couple of questions from me, please. Firstly, just picking up on the guidance question again. It feels like there's a lot of reference to 2018 and the second half delivery, but in 2018 I think you did warn on video being at the low end, and you haven't done that today. But if we look at the run rate of video overall, it's tracking well below the low end and even the midpoint of guidance for the year. And just picking up on the comments in the last question, you were talking about a decent amount of visibility, particularly in the services business. So I just wanted to get a sense that it sounds like in video you can maybe hit the low end of the guidance for the year, but that's going to be driven by recovery and services at a lower margin. And then if you step to group EBITDA, you're tracking quite below that, even with the FX benefits in the first half relative to the 1.15. So from a profitability standpoint, you know, what really gives you confidence to deliver on the guidance? And then secondly, just a C-band related question. I was just wondering whether you have any more insight on potential tax implications. And sort of two parts to that question. The first part is around some of the CBA commentary about maybe some voluntary proceeds going to the FCC for things like rural broadband. And then secondly, your own tax implications of any proceeds thereafter. Thanks very much.
Yeah, thanks for that. Look, I mean, we've given a range of guidance in and given a pretty good amount of visibility, I think, in video networks sort of overall and EBITDA. And what we're saying is we're on track in all of them, and that's a positive as far as I'm concerned. It's clear that we've got work to do in the second half, but I think the message is we know what that work is and we intend to deliver it. You know, the guys gave a fair amount of commentary around what's going to drive that expansion. And, you know, from a profitability standpoint, I think we've made really good strides there. We've done a really good job in controlling costs, in sort of focusing on, you know, our organization so that we're simplifying, delivering great services to customers, but also being pretty careful on the profitability side. So, you know, overall, much as we've said, we're on track in all of the elements and expect to deliver on guidance for the full year. Tax, Andrew?
And then tax, I think we've said, based upon what we've looked at, a range of about 25-26% or so on the proceeds.
Thanks. And do you have any sort of view?
Michael, I got a feeling we didn't answer a part of your C-band question.
Yeah, exactly. It's just on the any proceeds going to the FCC on a sort of voluntary basis, like the CBA has mentioned.
Well, look, I mean, we've been pretty consistent from the beginning that we think the economic benefit of rapidly delivering this spectrum into 5G kind of dwarfs any sort of auction proceeds or sale proceeds. I think the economic value of each year of sort of accelerated delivery of 5G is measured in the sort of 50 billion range if you look at sort of commentators on this. That said, you know, we recognize the concerns of some, and, you know, some have expressed that auction proceeds should accrue to the Treasury, and we've indicated we're willing to think about that and address that once it's clear that our proposal is being adopted. So wouldn't comment any further than that other than, you know, we have a little ways to go in understanding all of the proposal elements, and we'll be able to comment more on that once the path forward and the situation is further defined.
Great, thanks so much. That's really clear.
Thank you. The next question comes from the line of Nick Dempsey from Barclays. Your line is open. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good morning, guys. Just one question remaining. If you are near the bottom end of your revenue guidance in 2019 for the group, then you need to show about 4% revenue growth to get to the bottom end of your 2020 guidance. In the context of everything you've said this morning, 4% still seems like a very aggressive rebound. Did you give some thought to reducing your 2020 guidance at this point, given the trends you're seeing?
So, Nick, look, I mean, we haven't said anything about being in the bottom end of the range. That seems to be, you know, that's obviously something that you're sort of thinking about. You know, we've been pretty consistent on this, right? We've delivered a strong first half. We've got good visibility in the second half. You know, we hit the number last year. We intend to do that this year, and I think while we're not going to get into sort of more detail around the specifics of the deals, we closed a good amount of business in the first half, which will reflect through into the second. With respect to 2020, look, no reason to sort of change or make any commentary on that at this point. Obviously, we're going to look at how we progress through the second half of 2019, what our exit rate looks like, and kind of how that projects forward into 2020. But right now, we feel good about 2019 and hitting in all elements, you know, on all areas, video, networks, revenue, and EBITDA.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes from the line of Patrick Wellington from Morgan Stanley. Your line is open. Please go ahead.
Oh, yeah. Good morning, everybody. I've got three questions, as is maybe traditional. On C-band, Steve, have you got any thoughts on timing? The dictionary definition of the fall is that the fall finishes on the 23rd of December. But my feeling is that the FCC looks as though it's going to be ready for a report and order before that. So some sort of sense of timing on C-band. Secondly, just to complete the sort of set of people's worries about C-band proceeds, there's a school of thought that says that Eutelsat and Telesat will turn nasty at the last moment and ask for more than their circa 5% that they're due each. Do you see that as a possibility in the process, that there's a bit of a shake-up at the end there? And then thirdly, back onto the business, actually a couple of questions. Can you give us some sort of sense of the shape of revenue growth through Q3 and Q4? Will we gradually accelerate faster in Q3 and then even faster in Q4? Or does what you've said about the level of contract activity you've got coming through, you know, suggest that we should start to see immediate growth benefits? And then very finally, I'm going to come back on your last answer and say it sounds to me like you think you can do better than the bottom end of the guidance. Is that the case?
That sounded like four questions to me, Patrick.
Yeah, it was four questions. Apologies.
So look, on the definition of the fall, I don't think two Brits commenting on that's probably going to get us far. I think in terms of timing, look, I mean, what I'm saying is I think this year we'll have clarity. I think that's consistent with everything that we're seeing. You know that the FCC meet, the commissioners meet on a monthly basis, and sort of forecasting which of those meetings are the ones where we're going to get that clarity, I think is... I don't have that visibility. It's clearly in the purview of the FCC, but I definitely do see things accelerating. The recent PN is on an accelerated timeline, and that's typically what you see when the FCC is looking to complete the record and kind of have some momentum behind drafting a report and order. So definitely see that. I think it'll be this year. Pretty sure it'll be this year based on what we're seeing, but whether it's end of Q3, beginning of Q4, end of Q4, I'm honestly not sure. Look, on the CBA, I have to say I think it's pretty remarkable that we have pretty much complete alignment between the four operators and four competitors, right? And so I think that's really both remarkable and pleasing. And nothing that we've sort of done since the time we formed the CBA, I guess back at the back end of last year, has been contentious for anything other than aligned. And so my expectation is that that will continue. Shape of revenue, I mean, look, I think it's a little different probably on the network side than on the video side. I think on the network side, we'll expect to see, you know, a sort of step up in Q3 and then in Q4. We sort of, if you look at the path of revenues last year, we kind of accelerated through Q3 and Q4. And I think given the shape of the contracts we closed, I think you'd expect the same thing. On the video side, I think we traditionally, and certainly if we look at where we see the revenue coming from this year, I think Q4 will probably be stronger than Q3. But again, our focus is to try and obviously close out as much of it as early as we possibly can, and that will obviously help us into 2020 and beyond. And now I didn't write down your fourth question.
Better than the bottom end of the guidance. You're clearly indicating better than the bottom end.
I feel like I've answered that question a few times, but look, we've given a range. We're trying to, you know, get ourselves, as helpfully in that range in all of the areas, and given what I've seen, I'm pretty confident that we're going to, you know, be in the range, and I'm not going to say anything more than that.
That's great. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes from the line of Giles Thorne from Jefferies. Your line is open. Please go ahead.
Thank you. I had three questions too, please. The first one was coming back to this question of voluntary proceeds in the C-band situation. Peter Pitch obviously very consciously said what he said when he said that in front of the House subcommittee. And that's a decided shift in the CBA's position. So what I'd be interested to hear is what's on the other side of that quid pro quo. He won't have said that for no reason, so there must have been something else on the other side of that that you've asked and perhaps secured, be it auction design or something. So any context around why he said that would be very, very useful. Second question was for Ferd, picking up on the news that SES has been expanding services with Sky Deutschland in Germany, obviously. It'd be useful if you could expand on exactly what you've been doing there, and does this close the gap on any revenue shortfall that emerged post the 2017 contract renewal with Sky Deutschland? And then another one back to Steve, I guess, coming back to the question of HTS Leo and specifically OneWeb. Among others, OneWeb now has its satellites up, and we're starting to see in the public domain some of the data points around performance, speeds and latency and the such like, which all look rather impressive on paper. It'd be interesting to hear your initial impressions and whether you're seeing anything that changes your view, which, if you'll forgive me, I'm going to interpret as you've historically questioned the legitimacy and the relevancy and the sustainability of HTS LEO. So first impressions of what's coming out of OneWeb's network performance. Thank you.
Thanks, Giles. I don't think I'd say anything much more than I said before on this question of voluntary contribution. You know, our main benefit of what we bring is speed and execution. We know exactly what we have to do to clear the spectrum, and we can do it fast. And I think that's always been the tremendous sort of strength of the CBA proposal and continues to be. But, you know, we recognize that there are concerns out there on, you know, around auction proceeds accruing to Treasury. And, you know, we don't want to let that stand in the way, but I would say that, you know, we're going to defer any question on that until we really understand that our proposal represents the path forward. And so we've clearly indicated, to your point, a willingness to engage there, but you know, we have to understand more of the details of what the FCC has in mind, and that process continues. And this is, you know, this right from the start, we've said that this is a complicated thing to do to try and balance the needs of all stakeholders, as you see when you read what's in the record, but also the sort of the speculation around this. There's a lot of people involved in this process, and so engaging with those people and making sure that there's a balanced outcome is something that, you know, we're pretty focused on. And I feel good about where that sits. I feel good about the fact that we're sort of aligning folks, and we're sort of moving. It feels like we're moving into a bit of a different phase, and I think that's good. I'm not sure about that.
Yeah, Giles, could you please repeat your question regarding Sky Germany, because we're not sure we got it acoustically.
Sorry, let me repeat. I read news that SES, or I guess MX1, has been expanding services with Sky Deutschland. So I wanted to get a bit more color on that and a sense of the quantum.
Yeah, so no, indeed. MX1 has historically been a service provider for video services to Sky Deutschland. And we recently indeed concluded another deal, in particular for all kinds of disaster recovery services to be provided by MX1 in Munich for Sky.
And then on the LEOs in general, it's definitely the case that I've been a skeptic, Giles, but I wouldn't say I'm a basher of LEO in any way, but I'm a skeptic primarily based on business case, right? How can you deploy that amount of capital, be so delayed in generating revenue and make a return? It doesn't make too much sense to me. And I'm still there, right? I don't think anything that I've seen, frankly, anything that anyone can point me to, suggests that that's not the case, or suggests that that's a wrong interpretation of what it takes to deliver a sensible return by deploying, you know, hundreds or thousands of satellites. With respect to OneWeb, I still think they've got a long way to go. I lived through a whole bunch of skepticism when we were building out UWB, so I'm certainly going to not contribute to that from OneWeb's perspective. But look, you know, having whatever they got, is it six satellites up? It's a long way from the hundreds that they need. And I think it's relatively easy to sort of demonstrate performance on one or two or a handful of satellites. It's a completely different matter when you're trying to deliver sustaining services to customers. So long, long way to go there, Giles, and I certainly haven't changed my view on the challenge that delivering services from LEO represents.
Thank you. And if you'll permit me just to, that was very clear, Steve. If you'll permit me just a quick follow-up on the C-band question. You were up with Chairman Pai in D.C. on the 16th, I think it was the 16th, no, 18th of July, along with Stephen Spengler. Clearly, it was an all-principals, all-heads meeting. The comments today about being encouraged by the FCC body language, are you happy to explicitly link that comment to your meeting with Pai just a week or so ago?
Well, look, we filed an ex parte, so you can read that. But definitely, the fact that we're now kind of engaged, across the board, that activity is increasing. That the chairman has publicly said that he expects to have news on this matter within the next handful of months. All of that points in a good direction. You'd expect that we're engaged with the FCC, not just with the chairman himself, but with the chairman's office, with other commissioners, and with the various different bureaus, and that activity is definitely increasing. And so, in my mind, that's all to the good, but also very necessary as we really look to, you know, bring this whole thing together.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. The next question comes from the line of Sami Kassab from Exane BNP Paribas. Your line is open. Please go ahead.
Sammy?
Mr. Kassab, your line is open. Please go ahead.
Can you hear me? Hello?
Yeah.
Can you? Yeah, thank you. First question is on YaLive. Can you please elaborate on the integration of the commercial operations into the video segment? How much additional revenues will this bring? What is the deal exactly? What's been YaLive revenue growth trend in recent quarters? A little bit more on how much YaLive will contribute to meeting video guidance revenues this year, please. Secondly, can you comment on the pricing environment for mobility following the failure of IS-29? Do you think you can increase prices in certain segments of this market, perhaps the North Atlantic IFC? And lastly, you talked about supporting four of the five cruise operators. You refer to vessel expansion potential. In order to help me understand how much potential there is there, can you share with us the number of vessels or the share of vessels of these four operators that you currently have on board your infrastructure, please? Thank you.
Okay, so on YaLive, this is more about bringing the kind of the sales and go-to-market team within SES and sort of aligning it with the rest of our organization and the rest of our go-to-market. Don't expect substantial increases in revenue, and in fact, you know, it's definitely a challenging it's challenging. We've built a really good neighborhood, a strong neighborhood, but revenue generation is lower than we would expect, and this is part of, you know, a drive to both generate more revenue more consistently with the way that we sell all of our other neighborhoods, but also, you know, drive cost out of the business, to be perfectly honest. On the network questions, JP?
Yes, I'll take the next two. So on mobility, and I think your point around, you know, does the failure of IS-29E drive a chance for, I might phrase as opportunistically raising prices in that sector? What I'd say is that, you know, our first focus was actually, you know, on honouring the restoration agreement with Intelsat and making sure that they're their services were back up, and we have an existing restoration agreement, which I'm sort of not at liberty to share details around. And outside of that, we pretty much have contracts with all of the major aero service providers already. Those contracts are, you know, long-term in nature and have price and volume, contract terms within them. So we're pretty much under those terms as well. So no, not really. I didn't see that make a particular impact into pricing in that particular sector. On the second one related to that in cruise, yes, obviously we're very pleased with knocking down more and more of the key logos in the cruise industry and do have four out of the five major activities. I can't share the number of vessels because these are, you know, ongoing activities as we add more and more vessels within those. What I will share is that we typically get bought in onto the, as I described earlier, the flagship cruise ships first, because that's where they want their absolute premium customer service. Once we've done all of those, we tend to, you know, go down into the sort of medium and lower end of the cruise ships within those customers. So that's the sort of detail I could probably share there without going into specific numbers of vessels per cruise line.
Thank you.
Thank you. I would now like to hand the conference back to Mr. Whiting for closing remarks. Please go ahead, sir.
And thanks, Julia. I think that's because there are no more questions. Thanks, everyone, for joining and taking the time this morning. As ever, myself and the rest of the IR team are available if you have any follow-ups. And with that, I'll say thanks very much and enjoy the summer and have a great holiday. Thanks and goodbye.
Ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude the conference for today. Thank you all for participating. You may now disconnect.